Deuteronomy 25. When men have a dispute, they are to take it to court, and the judges will decide the case, acquitting the innocent and condemning the guilty. If the guilty man deserves to be beaten, the judge shall take him and make him lie down and have him flogged in his presence with the number of lashes his crime deserves. But he must not give him more than 40 lashes. If he is flogged more than that, your brother will be degraded in your eyes. Do not muzzle an ox while it is treading out the grain. If brothers are living together and one of them dies without a son, his widow must not marry outside the family. Her husband's brother shall take her and marry her and fulfill the duty of a brother-in-law to her. The first son she bears shall carry on the name of the dead brother, so that his name will not be blotted out from Israel. However, if a man does not want to go marry his brother's wife, she shall go to the elders at the town gate and say, "My husband's brother refuses to carry on his brother's name in Israel. He will not fulfill the duty of a brother-in-law to me." Then the elders of his town shall summon him and talk to him. If he persists in saying, "I do not want to marry her," his brother's widow shall go up to him in the presence of the elders, take off one of his sandals, spit in his face, and say, "This is what is done to the man who will not build up his brother's family line." That man's line shall be known in Israel as the family of the unsandaled. If two men are fighting and the wife of one of them comes to rescue her husband from his assailant, and she reaches out and seizes him by his private parts, you shall cut off her hand. Show her no pity. Do not have two differing weights in your bag, one heavy, one light. Do not have two different measures in your house, one large, one small. You must have accurate and honest weights and measures, so that you may live long in the land the Lord your God has given you. For the Lord your God detests anyone who does these things, anyone who deals dishonestly. Remember what the Amalekites did to you along the way when you came out of Egypt. When you were weary and worn out, they met you on your journey and cut off all who were lagging behind. They had no fear of God. When the Lord your God gives you rest from all the enemies around you in the land he has given you to possess as an inheritance, you shall blot out the memory of Amalek from under heaven. Do not forget. Deuteronomy 26. When you have entered the land the Lord your God has given you as an inheritance and have taken possession of it and settled it, take some of the first fruits of all that you produce from the soil of the land the Lord your God has given you and put them in a basket. Then go to the place the Lord your God will choose as a dwelling for his name and say to the priest in office at the time, "I declare today to the Lord your God that I have come to the land the Lord swore to our forefathers to give us." The priest shall take the basket from your hands and set it down in front of the altar of the Lord your God. Then you shall declare before the Lord your God, "My father was a wandering Aramean, and he went down into Egypt with a few people and lived there and became a great nation, powerful and numerous. But the Egyptians mistreated us and made us suffer, putting us to hard labor. Then we cried out to the Lord, the God of our fathers, and the Lord heard our voice and saw our misery, toil, and oppression. So the Lord brought us out of Egypt with a mighty hand and an outstretched arm, with great terror and with miraculous signs and wonders. He brought us to this place and gave us this land, a land flowing with milk and honey. And now I bring the first fruits of the soil that you, O Lord, have given me. Place the basket before the Lord your God and bow down before him. And you and the Levites and the aliens among you shall rejoice in all the good things the Lord your God has given you and your household. When you have finished setting aside a tenth of all your produce in the third year, the year of the tithe, You shall give it to the Levite, the alien, the fatherless, and the widow, so that they may eat in your towns and be satisfied. Then say to the Lord your God, I have removed from my house the sacred portion and have given it to the Levite, the alien, the fatherless, and the widow, according to all you commanded. I have not turned aside from your commands, nor have I forgotten any of them. I have not eaten any of the sacred portion while I was mourning, nor have I removed any of it while I was unclean, nor have I offered any of it to the dead. I have obeyed the Lord my God. I have done everything you commanded me. Look down from heaven, your dwelling place, and bless your people Israel and the land you have given us, as you promised on the oath of your forefathers, a land flowing with milk and honey. The Lord your God commands you this day to follow these decrees and laws. Carefully observe them with all your heart and with all your soul. You have declared this day that the Lord is your God, and that you will walk in his ways, and that you will keep his decrees, commands, and laws, and that you will obey him. And the Lord has declared this day that you are his people, his treasure possession, as he promised, and that you are to keep all his commands. He has declared that he will set you in praise, fame, and honor high above all the nations he has made, and that you will be a people holy to the Lord your God, as he promised.
No questions yet. What have you learned?
It's good to have both sandals.
It's what?
Don't you grab anybody's private part?
Yeah.
Especially if you are
a woman.
Yes.
It's a good thing we read this.
Oh, Lord.
No thoughts, huh? Okay, so instead we didn't learn anything. What do you think? Try that one first.
I think God tries to cover everything here.
Well, I have a question about why was God so wanting the brother to marry if a man died without children? So his name wouldn't be wiped out from the tribes, I understand.
Correct.
They were very harsh with him if he wouldn't do his duty.
Correct.
What's that all about?
What if the brother was already married?
It doesn't say to marry her, does it?
Yeah, he takes her in as his wife.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
but not on a permanent basis. Wait till the son, so there's a son.
Well, yes. If he's already married.
Yeah. Doesn't make any difference. Oh. I'll explain that in a little while.
So he just has to do that until there's a son, then he can go back to his own life.
Correct. Remember, they are not in the promised land yet. All right? When the land has been distributed amongst them, and the land belongs to his brother, if his brother dies before it's time, who gets the property?
His brother
would get it. Alright, and that's not what God wants. And we're talking about going into the promised land, the land being divided amongst the tribes and the families of Israel. This is not an eternal thing. It had to do with establishing the house of Israel. And that he must establish it, and the woman, if she has a son, then establishes the name of his uncle. So in the name of his uncle does not die. I mean, name of his father, in a sense, would be his uncle. That name would continue on. In order that the land would not be partialed out to anybody else. No one can claim it. You understand what I'm saying? Now, the book of Ruth, it had nothing to do with land. It had to do with something else. We won't go there today. Okay, have to have some kind of inheritance. This has to do with inheritance, not with anything else. And they have not yet crossed into that promised land. And so I don't want the name to be wiped out. Now, the name is important to God. God said, I don't want the name being wiped out. If the name becomes wiped out, guess what Scripture says? Who's responsible for that name being wiped out? The brother. Okay? Now, we look at it in our lives, is that really, really strange, way out of case, has no bearing in our lives? That may be true. I am not saying that it makes sense, but I'm not telling you it makes sense. I'm telling you this much. That's how God wanted it. So that the land would not be partialed out to anybody else. It belongs. In a sense, the wife would be able to live on the property. Okay? Because the wife cannot own property, but he can.
So
her son would have it.
So it wouldn't be considered adultery?
Would not be considered adultery.
If it's within the family, basically.
Once the condition's been finished, that's it. The name carries on. It sounds backward to us. It doesn't make sense to us. It's a stupid law. But that's not what it says in the Torah, is it?
What if the boy dies at a young age? Does he have to go back and have her make another child?
The Torah doesn't explain that. Doesn't give that an option. What you have to have is confidence about God. Why would God want that? I mean, it's not a happenstance. It's not a, I'm going to see what happens. Oh, it died too. Oh, no, what am I going to do now? That's not what God is saying. You have to look at what God was going to do and what he promised. He promised that the land would belong to that family. He, God, will carry it out. Yes?
Well, she has no son, she has no husband.
She can die. But the land will belong to
the son.
If she has no son, no daughter, no nothing, it belongs to
next.
This is the reason why God said what? That if he does not do that, he is a man that has no shoes. Now, what's a weird statement? Jeff.
Does that relate to about Abraham and wherever his sandal would go, that would be the land?
Alright, so this man his land becomes partialed out. That's what's going to happen to his land because his shoes are not going to be on his own feet. He's going to be out of his house. It's the house of the man with no shoes. He just wanders, no place, he has no home. Yes.
Psalms 108 says, "Over Edom I'll cast my shoe." Why does he?
That's a different situation than this one.
What does the shoe say? Like,
no, that's
I disown you?
That's a different situation. We're not there, but casting the shoe is yeah, it has to do with yeah.
Like I disown you? I don't want you. Wait.
You're a huh?
Symbolism of a shoe.
Wait. Daniel?
All those various symbols have to do with the metaphor of what a shoe means.
What does a shoe mean?
Well, a shoe means is a person.
Shoe
that is who you are, because if you don't have a shoe, you can't go anywhere.
You can't go anywhere.
You don't exist, you don't walk, you don't go anywhere, you don't own anything. You're of no value.
You have no value.
You're no different than a cripple. A beggar is on the street that can't do anything.
Now, who else had the... You had... Who else had... Rose.
I don't remember what I said now.
Oh.
In Arab countries, they
still... Oh, yeah. In Arab countries, they take their shoe off, and it's an insult, you know, to hit you with their shoe.
What did Nikita Khrushchev do?
He took his shoe off and beat the table.
See, all over the world.
You know, when he banged his shoe on the table, we all knew what it meant, right? I hope you remember it. Way back in 1950s.
Yeah.
Some of you were not around then, but... I'm sorry, what?
I said half the group don't probably.
Comment that I have about the wife having to... The brother of the deceased. What about the godly seed? Is that part of the reason that God would have him do that?
Not the godly seed, but the seed of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Yes. That seed being carried forward.
Okay, godly seed means something else?
Something else. That has to do with the nether line. That we're going from the promise there, promise of Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, down to one of the sons, down, all the way to David, and all the way down. That particular seed is different than, that's called the godly seed. That is the seed of where Yahshua comes through.
Oh,
okay.
So once the this is fulfilled and the woman has a son, is it still the responsibility of the brother to take care of working?
Until the young boy is able to do so. Right. He has to take on the role of the caretaker. I mean, that's just no ands, ifs, or buts about that. It's not like, oh, you're pretty good. Goodbye. No, that doesn't work in those days. No, you had to wait until the child was of age, which is age of what age?
12. 20.
Age of 20 is age of responsibility.
Okay, so just as a scenario, like in today's situation, so you've got a woman who her husband has to go take care of service or whatever, her sister-in-law, and they're all still in the family. That just seems like that would create an uncomfortable home.
Yes.
A major problem.
I assume that in a Jewish world, Jewish society, and their laws, yes, you'd have to do that.
Well, you'd have to do what? I'm saying that would be.
He'd have to fulfill the role or the function of his brother. Yes.
Yeah, but you know, if you're just trying to keep land where it's supposed to be, if you're not in the land, then it's null and void.
Right.
Yeah, but they're heading toward that land.
Right. But
this is just right. We're talking 2 months before they go in, 1 month before they go in the promised land.
Right. What I'm saying, her question was today, since we're not in the land
that's
of
correct.
Israel,
doesn't have any grounds for today because there's no ownership.
Because what the whole
question and I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about human nature. I'm talking about the effect of that in over a family environment. The effect of.
Well, in today's society, it'd be horrible. I'll grant you. 100%, 1,000 horrible. Yes.
To answer that question, Carmel, go inquire information regarding conservative Orthodox Mormon groups who currently have that situation. Because there are multiple women in the same household share one. And it's a different philosophical
Orthodox
point of view.
Mormon?
Orthodox Mormon. Yeah. Very conservative
right.
Mormon.
Yeah.
Yes. It is a different philosophical point of view.
It doesn't
translate to what the people in this room today.
No.
But very common amongst their philosophy, and they're okay with that.
Mm-hmm. Different culture back in Israel, mm-hmm. and even modern day Arab countries would have multiple wives. It was no
that's
big
true.
Deal.
I guess
so
that's
it's kind of a different.
If you're accustomed to it, but our particular society, it'd be nothing but bickering and quarreling and anger and resentment and bitterness. Okay, have we covered that subject matter?
Okay. What happens if you keep having girls?
I'm sorry, what?
What happens if you keep having girls?
Okay, what happens if you have girls?
Keep trying.
She marries.
Oh, great.
Adopt boys.
One of the men died having no sons. And they came to Moses and the daughter said, this is not fair. So what did they do?
They
turned around and they got the ownership of their father inherited, but they must marry someone within that family
right. In
order to hold it. That's the same exact law that's here. Okay? A brother, we're thinking of, the biblical word for brother, we think of flesh and blood. Brother is not necessarily meaning flesh and blood. It means a relative thereof.
Could be a cousin.
Could be a cousin. It could be, in the case of Ruth,
a distant cousin.
In other words, someone responsible for carrying out. Now, in the book of Ruth, since the nearest of kin did not want to take it, his shoe was taken off, but what happened?
Boaz stepped in
and took over. All right? I'm not saying we have a full understanding of those things. We can assume what we think we know. But we still stumble through one of these statutes. But it has to do with inheritance. Who gets what? God does not want one particular person to begin to loan land after land after land after land in conglomerates and millions and multiple billions of dollars worth of territory. All of, that's contrary to the will of God. Let's see, in our country, our society, hey, you can own as much as you want. If you can swindle somebody, cheat somebody, kill somebody, and not know it, you got the land. And you become very wealthy over real estate, can't you?
Yeah.
You can get very wealthy over real estate if you know how to play little games. Okay, that's contrary to the will of God.
Okay, now what about the wife helping out her husband who's in a fight with somebody?
Okay. Sorry, what?
No fighting dirty.
No fighting dirty, yeah.
Keep it above.
For the woman!
The man could do it, and he would be okay.
No. Mind your own business.
Hey, be very careful what we're talking about. We're talking about, okay, that woman is doing this to permanently damage. It's not just like grabbing it. We're talking doing damage. Pull her off of him. That's what that phrase is. So it's not grabbing, it's, oh, I just grabbed it. No, you're grabbing, you're doing something, because what's happening? Her husband is on the losing end of the battle. All right, two guys are fighting. Her husband's losing the battle, and she's going to do something to preserve her husband's life.
All right.
We're not talking about just a fist fighting. We're talking about fighting of life and death between two men. One of them is losing, and he's going to die.
Can she use a 2x4?
she can defend her husband and protect her husband, but not by that method.
It didn't say you couldn't smack him on the back of the head with a
frying
pan.
No. It doesn't mean you can't pick up a steak and pound it through his skull either. But don't, like Daniel said, don't fight dirty.
So you can kill him, but you can't.
You can't touch those things. Okay? Because why? God says it's unfair. That's the most vulnerable spot in a man. Hey. If he's got the upper hand killing your husband, you could prevent that. You could have other sources, other means by which to do so. But not that one.
But if it was evil purpose.
Hey, we're not talking whether or not we like it or not. We're talking what the statutes are saying.
I understand.
Okay, that's how God thinks. And those one of those little statutes and judgments that God's going to say. If the statute is this, don't do that. If you do this, guess what happened? Cut your hand off. All right?
Well, and God even, Moses even addresses that. He said, don't let your eye take pity on her, because he knows it's like, man, it's harsh, but it's a very clear point.
Very clear one.
Okay, so how does that differ from a man attacking a woman and her kneeing him?
That is against the Torah as well. He can go to death. He can receive a death sentence.
I understand. But how is that different from saving yourself versus saving your husband's life? Let's say it's a child.
The Bible does not talk about children. The Bible is talking about her husband, two grown men. No, a child is totally dependent upon mom and dad. Do any means you can to save the child's life. It has nothing to do with that. It has to do with two grown men fighting for life and death. You know what I'm saying? This is not just a fist fight. It's not a bunch of guys go out and beer and have a ball. Let's go up and have a beer together. You know, this has nothing to do with life and death. They're going to be an assailant to assault. Someone is attacking somebody else. They got the upper hand. And to kill them. Okay? And the woman's going to try to take vengeance? Can't. Try to protect her husband? Can't. Not in that method.
Disgraceful.
The only thing is disgraceful. It's the only thing he says don't do. Anything else he didn't say you can't do.
And murder business?
Yes.
Well, it says here, show...
I don't think it's a form of murder. I think it's a form of self-defense. There's a difference between self-defense and murder.
Yeah. But you can hit him over the head with a 2x4 and kill him. That's going
to
ruin his chances of reproduction.
Yeah, but when you
talk... Wait. This is not the issue of reproduction. This is not the issue of reproduction. That's not what the subject matter is about.
It's principle.
It's a principle.
Now, it would be a disgrace to my husband and to myself if I went...
You speak quickly.
I would say that it is about reproduction.
Well,
it says here, show her no pity. You know, a few chapters earlier in Deuteronomy 7, when they're talking about going in and all these nations are driving out ahead of them, it's like, make no treaty with them, show them no mercy, do not have pity upon them.
Right.
The point is that why would you have pity upon the woman? You would say, well, what she did was justified. He had it coming to him, you would do them in. Well, the point is that by her actions, she would be basically disrupting future generations.
I understand what your point. And
but the point of driving out the nations in front of them, the reason why they didn't do it is because, number one, it was too tough. It was too tough for them. And number two, they were had pity upon them. It's like, you know, how can we do this? They didn't see what was coming down the road in the future.
I guess it's possible.
They just saw the moment in time. And
I see as a point.
They judged.
I'm trying to get to this point of reality here. I grant you, you have a point. I will not discard it. All right, but we need to move along here because I don't have much time. All right. Chapter 25. Mm-hmm. We're still on there, right? We went through the one about the brother, the one about the wife and the genitals, and but I want to go to verse 1 to 3.
Which chapter?
21st chapter.
25.
Verse 25.
Chapter
25. I'm sorry, what?
Chapter 25, verse 1?
Yes. 1 and 3. 1 to 3. What does it tell us?
Can't kill
him. Not for her justice.
All right. There's a specific things that God has established here. Now, what is it he specifically established?
You take him to court, you don't beat him up.
No, this is after you take him to court.
You beat him up at court.
You whip them after the judgment.
Okay.
Find righteousness.
There's a limit to punishment.
Yeah, that there's righteous punishment to be doled out, but not to be exceeded.
Or abused.
Or abused.
Don't
or
who's in charge of that?
The judge.
All right. Now, answer if you can. Verse 4.
What's that got to do with you? Because he has the right to eat while he's working. You can't starve him and expect him to still work.
Oh, after you beat this guy for 40 whips, you can't starve him?
No, it's a different subject. It's totally different subject. It says you shall not vocal
beat. Oh, now wait a minute now. Don't take the Torah saying, oops, I'll take it over here and I'll rip it out and I'll pour over here. Oh, it's just a statement. Let's go on with life. This has a purpose being put right here at this point, right after verse 1, 2, and 3.
Okay, you whip him and make him go back to work. So that he can have a way to feed himself. You don't totally allow him not.
I mean, don't you think it's strange?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's a really odd, out of place, doesn't belong there. It just out of the blue, Moses threw it in there, and it continued on with about women and having the husband and the brother, and then about this, and it goes on to other ones that had to do with cheating and measurements and levels and so on and so forth, and then the Amorites, you know, get rid of those guys. Jeff?
Well, he shifts the subject in verse 5. So you shift the subject in verse 4.
The chapters are an arbitrary thing anyway, to an degree. The verse sent, the order of the verses, you know, like the numbering of verses, the numbering of chapters, where they cut.
Okay.
This is somewhat arbitrary anyway,
so
right?
A weird sentence in the middle of all the others.
Yes, one sentence. It's not even
about
back.
People. And then the officers like no.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, I just thought it was a picture of, you have somebody who, you know, okay, they did something wrong and so the judgment is against them, but you don't, I don't know how to say that. There's no punitive damages. It's basically you take as much to pay the debt as necessary, and then after that you leave it. And then with the ox, it's the same thing. If he's working, you know, if he's not being obedient, then you punish him, but you don't punish him so far that he can't do his work anymore. Is that kind
of
not the same thing? Well, but that's what I'm saying. I mean,
it's saying don't punish the man more.
Remember, the ox is not plowing the field.
Yeah, it's treading grain. So the point is that, you know, you don't muzzle, you don't keep the ox hungry while it is treading food, its own food.
It's like torture. Don't torture the guy.
So it, well, because I mean,
like the carrot on the stick.
The thing though is, just, you know, how are you like stretching this? Because what are you saying? Like, if he likes beating, don't stop beating him. I mean, what is?
Yeah, you hand up.
Yeah, and
verse 9.
1 Corinthians verse 9 says,
yep.
For it is written in the law of Moses, thou shalt not muzzle the mouth of the ox that treadeth out the corn. Doth God take care for oxen?
Okay. Is there a connection? What did Apostle Paul talk about there?
Compensating ministers of God.
Okay, so he's doing a job, isn't he? Who's doing the job in verse 1, 2, and 3?
The judge.
Don't muzzle the judge actions. Don't stop the don't alter the judgment. Don't stop the judge from carrying out the order.
I would disagree with that, because the context of this is an ox eating from the fruit of his labor. So what is the judge doing? He's beating, so the judge deserves to get beaten?
No, we're not talking about. We're talking about, what does an ox represent? The ox, same thing as a bull. What's a bull represent?
Leadership.
The one in charge. The one doing the work. Right?
The Apostle Paul's point was that someone working in ministry should be able to benefit from ministry. That makes sense.
Makes sense.
But
why is it? Why? This is the place where it's at. Why is it here?
The judge should benefit from the judgment?
He should benefit. He shouldn't stop him. A judge can alter the conclusion. Remember, he makes a judgment. The judgment can't go more than 40 lashes, right? But if he's in the process, he sees the beating, he can actually stop it when it's enough.
How is that supporting the judge? Providing livelihood for the judge.
Allowing him to do his job.
But that's not providing livelihood to the judge.
Well, yeah, because if he didn't beat him 35
times... We're not talking about eating food here. We're talking about the actions, the deeds of, the function of the judge. You understand what I'm saying?
No.
What is treading out the grain? I mean, is that the separating to get...
The corn from the wheat, or corn from the chaff.
Okay, so it's kind of like...
In this context, it seems like it's doing his job.
Right.
Doing a job.
Separating the wheat from the tares, or maybe kind of thing. Or
he's doing something that he must do.
And this would say that if the judge...
The reason now, you could overrule if you as a person is beating this guy. What if you overrule the judge?
You're
the
wrong.
Torah doesn't say what happens to you. Does it?
Well, chaos.
No, what happened? It said, if you overbeat him, what happens to the person being beaten? He becomes. Make sure that the punishment justifies what the actions are. The judge is going to make the decision. Don't overrule him. Don't change it. He's the only one that can change the ruling, but he cannot go over 40. Now, let's say the judge says it's going to be 15 lashes. And after the 10th one, the guy is there in total humiliation, crying and weeping. The judge may say, that's enough. Don't keep going. Yes?
What is more humiliating about 40 blows than 39? That sounds pretty humiliating.
No, that's up to the maximum.
It depends on the person.
Yeah, depends upon the person.
You discipline children. Some kids don't even need to get spanked.
Yeah.
Some kids
get spanked
need a severe spank, you know, till that thing breaks.
Okay, let's go on. 26. Chapter 26. I'm going to go through it pretty rapidly. Verse 1 to verse 11 and verse 26 talk about the first fruits and nothing else. All right, and a certain ores which you do, after you've been there and you got the first fruits, you take in a basket, not in a barrel or in a pickup truck, but in a basket. You take first of the first fruits, you take it, and you go to the place where God wants you to take it to, and then, of course, it is given to the Levites. Kind of self-explanatory, right? But verse 12 and 15 is a different subject matter. They're not related. And it's the third year of tithing. Now, Daniel has done a very extensive study on this. But I want to introduce a different one. All right? I want you to think about this for a moment. There's a seven-year cycle. What is a seven-year cycle about? In the seventh year, what are you supposed to do to the land?
Let it lay flat.
Okay.
So that it may replenish itself.
Replenish itself. In that seventh year, there is no tithe.
Right. No
income. No tithe. Now, don't talk monetarily, please. Talking about the land. All right. Now, this is another way of looking at this. Since there is a three-year cycle, and another three-year cycle, because it's talking about 3 years, the third year. Now, why is there a three, and then another three? Wait a minute, we also have the seven-year cycle. All right, now this is one to think about. In the first year of the three-year cycle, the first year, you give your tithe to the Levite. In the second year of the three-year cycle, you keep yourself and you go to the place where God places his name. In the third year cycle, you take it and you give it to the poor and the widow and the stranger. In the fourth year, you repeat it. That is, repeat that three-year cycle. The fourth year, you give the Levite. The fifth year, you give it yourself. You go to the Feast of Tabernacles, you place south. Fifth year, you give the poor and the widow. In the seventh year, no one gets anything. No one. This way, what they think about is that third year cycle doesn't mean you only pay tithe every third year. It means in this cycle of 3 years, on the third year of that cycle, you do something different with it than anything else. What are you supposed to do different with it? What does it say? Let's read it again. I think it's kind of important. Interesting. It's just an interesting way of looking at things. Verse 12, when you have finished laying aside all the tithes of your increase in the third year, which is a year of tithing, that particular year, in the cycling of three, and have given it to the Levites, the strangers, and the fatherless. Now, so you got one, two, three. First Levites, then the widows, and the Levites, the stranger, and then the fatherless, and the widows. Then, so they may eat within your gates and be filled. Then you shall say before the Lord your God, I have removed the holy thing, that is a tithe, from my house, and also have given them to the Levites, the stranger, and the fatherless. We're in the third year cycle. And this widow, according to your commandments, and I have commanded me, I have not transgressed your commandments, nor have I forgotten them. I have not eaten any of it. Those 3 years now, you haven't eaten any of it because you've done exactly what you're supposed to do, except, where you're supposed to be, where God says he places his name. And I have not removed it, nor have I removed it any for unclean reason or for mourning, sorrow, or for the dead. That's kind of a really odd statement. Didn't even do it for the dying, who people are dying. You don't touch that at all because it belongs to, all tithe belongs to God, it's holy. And so he tells you exactly when to use it and how to use it. Now, at that point, after the third year, in the beginning of the fourth year, by the way, it's Pesach time, springtime, this is what you are to say before God. Look down from your holy habitation from heaven and bless your people Israel and the land which you have given us, just as you swore to your fathers, a land flowing with milk and honey. So in that three-year cycle, the end of that third-year cycle, when it's completed to finish, and you've done all the things that God wants you to do, in the beginning of the fourth year, that's when you ask God a blessing. Did you notice that? You ask God a blessing upon the house of Israel. Now, we've only been caught up this third tithe year. What's that meant? Some people believe that it's three tithes a year. And sometimes the third year, they think it's an extra tithe. Everybody has all sorts of interpretations. Both Judaism and Christianity have different interpretations. But I think it's a little interesting here to take a look at it. And says, what are you supposed to do after the third year? Oh, you're supposed to say this to God. I have not used it. I have not polluted it. I'm unclean. I didn't touch it. I didn't give it to the dead or the dying, those who are sorrow, mourning. Because what happens if there's sorrow, mourning, or tragedy, or upsetness? You have a tendency to say, I want to use this for that reason. And we're talking about this particular type of tithing. But nonetheless, you're looking at it, and you're saying, okay, now, all of a sudden, now we have another statement in the very last part of the chapter, verse 16. Did you notice that? Now Moses says, this day the Lord your God commands you to observe these statutes and judgments. Therefore you shall be careful to observe them with all your heart and with all your soul. Now, that takes some effort, doesn't it? The laws we have read, the statutes we have read, we may not fully understand them. We may not have a complete picture of them. But nonetheless, it says to carefully observe and do them. When you carefully observe and you do them, what happens? Verse 17, today you have proclaimed. A, listen to what I'm saying now. Not today, but on that day, on the first day of the beginning of the fourth year. You understand what I'm saying? The cycle of 1, 2, 3. You've done all those things. Year 1, year 2, and year 3. Now, beginning of year 4, which is repeating the cycle again. But on that fourth year, what do? You say those things to them. And on that day, you have proclaimed something. What have you proclaimed? You have proclaimed that God is your God. 3 years. Takes you 3 years to do something, and then you say to God, I have not polluted it. I have not taken it. I have not used it for any other reasons. I have obeyed all your statutes and your commandments, but you have ordered me to do so. And I'm doing this. And he says, you have today, verse 17, you proclaim the Lord to be your God, and you will walk in his ways and keep his statutes, his commandments, and his judgments, and they will obey his voice. Now also, says, also today, the day you do this proclaiming, the Lord has proclaimed something to you. Did you notice what it was?
We get to be his peculiar people, his treasure.
Yes. We get to be his treasure. It's a very fast day and little procedure, right? So on this 3-year cycle, when it comes to completion end, the fourth year starts, you say these things to God, you have proclaimed to God that he is your God. Mm-hmm. He turns around and he says, and you are my people. Isn't that interesting? Well, sometimes we think, well, aren't my God soon as I'm baptized? Well, no, I take some trials, take some tests, take some endurance, see whether or not you are going to endure and take on what God wants you to do. I mean, God's not a pushover, right? You got to see what you're going to do. Watch what you're going to do. See your actions. See your deeds. Is what you said from your mouth, is it true? We read that previous chapter, right? Whatever comes out of your mouth, you need to do. Always reminded me of the time of the book of Acts. When those guys took an oath using God's name and saying, of course, there might have been a time limit in there. We don't know. Doesn't tell us that. But they weren't going to eat or drink anything until they killed Paul. At least eat anything until they killed Paul. Well, they didn't succeed in killing Paul. We don't know what happened to them. They may not have survived. We don't know. But if they decided to go ahead and eat, guess what? They are cursed by God. Okay, I got to quit now. We're 10 minutes over time. Any more questions, quickly? These are things to think about. Yes?
How do we start that year, you know what I mean, the first year? If we are going to espouse to do this, I mean,
some people begin on the year they got baptized,
uh-huh. So
and they start doing that cycling at that point in time. No, don't try to catch up. You'll never catch up.
You can just start right this year or whatever, that kind of thing. And
probably, well, the season had to be during the Feast of Days of Unleavened Bread, during probably not before Passover, I would say. Yes. Oh, that was hers. Okay. That's what I would consider. In the past, that was always the date which seemed to be the most logical thing to use. And other church organizations, always then, not in the middle of the fall, not in the middle of winter, not when you got baptized. But some people have a different way of looking at things. And it's kind of like your own judgment you have to do. But it would appear from tradition, if I could say that word, it has to do with the first of the year, which becomes the grain offering. All right.